98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
Oh, at 4 o'clock, we hit the reset button here on the Burns and Gambo show. The top stories of the day are a reaction to the top stories of the day in sports here on 98.7 FM, Arizona sports station, starting with the Cardinals, and then we'll finish with the Cardinals. Cardinals top story number one, David Johnson today explains why he wasn't in on the 3rd and 2 after the 2-minute warning in the fourth quarter yesterday.
Yeah, it was actually the play before, the 3rd and 2. I was the play before that. I missed a blitz, so I had to go to the sideline and talk to Kirby about it because I actually did not see the guy, and that's my guy.
So he was taken out.
Got a timeout.
It was a disciplinary action?
You got put in timeout. And it was against the wall. I mean, I'm all for, making sure guys know when they're missing assignments, but, not during a crucial play coming up, a 3rd and 2 at the end of the game when you're trying to pull out a win here in front of your home crowd. I mean, you don't do it then. You do it later. Yes. Do it after the game. Do it during a 2-minute warning. You don't do it right then and there because then your best weapon is now off the field for the crucial 3rd and 2 play.
I don't know if I feel better or worse about yesterday with this news. I think it's actually worse. I think I actually feel worse about what happened yesterday with this news. And I didn't think there was anything in this world that could make me feel worse about what happened yesterday.
I just
don't get that.
I mean, here's the thing. I mean, it's again, this is Steve Wilkes learning. David Johnson's coming up. Why is he coming off the field? I got a 3rd and 2 coming up.
Man.
I need him on the field. We'll talk to him later.
Yeah. National Football League, Adam Schefter with the news about Jimmy Garoppolo. It's not good if you're a Niners fan.
Unfortunately for the 49ers, for Jimmy Garoppolo, it just came back and confirmed exactly what they feared. He is now lost for the season, which means that C.J. Beathard becomes the new starting quarterback in San Francisco.
Also, the 49ers are going to be without Richard Sherman for a few weeks. He's got a calf injury. He's going to miss 2 to 4 weeks, give or take.
No less than 20 people asking me, can we trade Sam Bradford to the 49ers? Man, they don't want him.
No.
They don't want him.
No, they don't. Hugh Jackson today. Baker Mayfield is absolutely our starting quarterback moving forward.
He had every opportunity that he was working at it to be ready for when his time was called, that he would make the best of it. And he's done that. So he's earned it by the way he's played.
Led 4 scoring drives. He led 4 scoring drives. Won their first, they had a 19-game winless streak that was snapped when they beat the Jets on Thursday night. Mayfield looked fantastic. Now, again, these young quarterbacks, they're going to have up and downs.
No doubt.
Highs and lows, but he looked very good against the Jets.
Devin Booker at Suns Media Day today. You and I were both there. The hand surgery kind of caught him by surprise, too.
Well, it caught me off guard. And I went in there. The doctor grabbed it. He was like, oh, it's torn. We're going to have to operate on it. I was like, what do you mean? But, it's part of the game. It's part of the NBA. It's part of every sport. You go through injuries and you have to deal with them. But, I think, technology's up so far advanced now to where people come back stronger. And, I look at it as a glass half full, not half empty.
He says it's his anticipation, it's his intention to be back by the opener, October 17th. We'll see if he can make that timetable or not. It's pretty aggressive, but that's what he's shooting for.
I'd be nice if he can, but I'm in no rush with Devin Booker to get him back. If it takes a week, if it takes an extra 10 days, whatever it is, I mean, they got a big investment in Devin Booker. Make sure he's right when he comes back.
The Diamondbacks opened up their final series at home of the season tonight. Robbie Ray, Clayton Kershaw. Diamondbacks officially eliminated yesterday with the Dodgers win. There is an outside shot the Dodgers can clinch here at Chase Field, but it would require A, them sweeping the Diamondbacks, and B, the Rockies getting swept at Coors Field by the Phillies. That's the only way it can happen. That's what you have to root against if you don't want to see the Dodgers celebrating here.
I don't want to see the Dodgers celebrating here, so I will root against that. I mean, absolutely don't want that to happen. I think Torey Lovello did tell Bud Black that he may rest a couple of players here or there, but they'll try to do everything they can to win.
I saw the lineup. It's not their best. It looks like a team that's been eliminated from the postseason and is giving a few guys the day off. I'll go over it in a little bit, but it's not their best. But our top story of the day, circling back to the Arizona Cardinals, the announcement from Steve Wilkes, the one that was mostly anticipated today.
We're looking at the situation, evaluating the film, evaluating the quarterback position, I decided that Josh Rosen would be our starter going forward.
In part because he believes that Rosen handled the moment well yesterday.
When you look at the situation when he went into the game, I didn't have a problem putting him in at that time because, again, I know he's very confident in what he's doing. When you look at the last possession when we got that fumble, it was about 11 and some change left on the clock. At that particular time, I had made the decision. They went on a 7-minute drive right there, so it looked like Josh was thrown in at the end, but he wasn't. So he can handle those type of situations, and I think he handled it well.
And so he is in, and I think most Cardinal fans, first of all, I don't think there was, and I know you and I agree on this, there was no decision to make. The decision was made.
Sure.
Right?
That drive that he's talking about, that also included the, and I don't want to say controversial, but it included the personal foul on Trey Boston, where he hit the defenseless receiver over the middle. So that caused the play to stop and get halted, and that took a little bit of time, too. They also converted a third down, a third and one with Howard. They kept the drive going, and they eventually kicked the field goal to go up 16-14. But it was clear from me in my spot in the press box watching the game that I was able to see Rosen start to get ready, start to get loose, moving his legs, you know, doing some, you know, exercises, then to, you know, throwing the ball a little bit, and then taking some snaps from Mason Cole, and then grabbing his helmets. I knew he was coming in the game during that drive, but he is right. That drive did take some time, because the Bears started on their own 16, and they got all the way down the field to kick the field goal to go up 16-14. So the decision was made. If the Bears had gone 3-and-out, Rosen might have gotten, you know, an extra series at some point. Maybe he comes into the game with 10 minutes left.
He might have, if it was, but the decision was made at 11 minutes. He didn't come in until there was 4.5 minutes. I know in the moment, I wasn't a big fan of bringing him in with 4.5, but you were damned if you did, damned if you didn't. I mean, what are you going to do, bring back Sam Bradford into the game? He had led 6 straight drives that had ended punt, 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 interception, fumble. I mean, it was
5 first downs in 6 series.
Yeah.
2 of them were picks. 1 was a fumble. I mean, it was
not an ideal scenario for a rookie to come in and make his debut, but what was the alternative?
A defeated Sam Bradford. I mean, it wasn't Sam Bradford at that point. When he fumbled that football, he laid on that ground for about 10 seconds. He didn't want to get up.
Yeah.
I mean, he was, I mean, you could go to that commercial, want to get away. 2 interceptions and a fumble in his last 3 possessions. I mean, I just be mentally drained, defeated, tackled. I mean, just, I mean, I don't know that he probably wanted to be anywhere but there. And then he was dejected on the sidelines, just sitting down. He knew Rosen was coming in after that. And I mean, maybe that's it. I mean, maybe at that point he's laying on the ground thinking, this is it. This is my career. I'm done.
I wouldn't be surprised at all if that thought flashed through his head.
Sure,
I'm excited about this. I'm not excited because I'm expecting results this year. I mean, I'll just say that right off the top. I'm not expecting him to come in and save the Cardinal season. And if you are out there, I would suggest you scale back your expectations a little bit. But I am excited because at 0-3, knowing that 0-3 teams just basically don't make the playoffs, right? 2018 is now about 2019, and now we get a good, long, hard look at Josh Rosen to get excited about what he brings to the table. And that, frankly, when you're 0-3,
that's what you're looking
for. Gives
you
a reason to watch, right? Gives
absolutely.
You a reason to get excited about this. All right, let's see what we got.
No, Cleveland's got a win. The Jets have a win. Buffalo's got a win. So all of these teams that are starting young quarterbacks, Josh Allen's got a victory this week. A shocking upset.
Shocking.
I mean, I don't know. Jordan, what was the bigger upset this week, in your opinion, Jordan? Was it the Bills beating the Vikings or me spanking Burnsy in fantasy football?
Well, see, that's an interesting question.
Which
because
was the bigger upset?
I was in a survivor pool,
yeah,
and like 60% had Minnesota winning that. I am not in a survivor pool for our fantasy host league,
yeah,
but if I were, I don't think it would be that strong. It's an impressive win, but I don't think as much as the Bills.
I'm one of the reigning perennial champions in fantasy football right here. That was a big win.
Well, but you were so strong in week 1 and week 2 that it wasn't a shock to see you
in
week 3.
I lost to Maloney.
But it's not like you were the Buffalo Bills.
No,
it was in weeks 1 and 2.
The Buffalo Bills were humiliated. They were arguably the worst team in the NFL the first 2 weeks.
All right, so it's not the biggest upset ever, me beating you in fantasy football. But back to my point real quick, all 3 of those teams have wins, so they're still kind of in it. They're still kind of playing for something, where the Cardinals are playing for next year.
Tomorrow is Ticket Window Tuesday, presented by Arizona Central Credit Union, and we are giving you the chance to win tickets so you can see Josh Rosen make his first start of his NFL career.
How about that?
Against the Seahawks this Sunday at State Farm Stadium.
How about that?
So you listen tomorrow at 7:15 a.m., 10:15 a.m., and then in the afternoon at 12:15 and 4:15 for your chance to win tickets for the debut Josh Rosen first ever start game this Sunday at State Farm Stadium. Sam Bradford's time in Arizona is over. Now what? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
and Monday with Burns and Gambo, presented by your Valley Chevy dealers. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Josh Rosen on Instagram, quote, "Since day one, Sam has had my back and helped me become the best quarterback I could be. I cannot thank him enough for showing me how to be a professional in every sense of the word. He is a leader, mentor, and a great person. He and Mike Glennon couldn't have been more supportive at a time that I thought might be a bit tense or awkward today. I couldn't be more thrilled to be in a quarterback room with two of the most selfless people I've ever been around as I start my career as a quarterback in the NFL. For that, I say thank you. With that being said, let's get the Valley rocking, AZ, 4 exclamation
points. There we go. Let's go. It's Rosen time.
There it is.
There it is. Let's get the Valley rocking.
There we are.
There was a sense of excitement there, you know, at the field. There was a sense of, I was getting text messages. Is Rosen going to come in? Is Rosen going to come in? Every time Bradford did something wrong. And then you could just feel the excitement that was there at the crowd. And then afterwards, I had, you know, I had some friends, the British Bird Gang. Our buddy Andy Venn was out for the game from Britain.
He was going to help if I owed you lunch for the Cardinals winning. He was going to help me pay for lunch.
That's good. It's good. Yeah. So, I mean, I was out there after the game was over. I got out to the Great Lawn and hung out with some of the fans, and everybody was talking about Rosen. There is 0-3. Push it aside. Push the 0-3 aside. New beginning. There's a sense of this is a new beginning. Josh Rosen could be a franchise quarterback here for the next 15 years. The 0-3 is not something after today that anybody's going to think about anymore. It's Josh Rosen. It's his team. Mm-hmm. Let's see what he can do. Growing pain, sure. There will be games where he struggles, but there will also be a game or two or three where this kid throws for 275 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Sure.
He's going to have a game like that. And we're going to look at that game and be like, wow, okay. You don't think Cleveland's excited about Baker Mayfield?
Of course they are.
I mean, he almost threw a pick. He had a fumble that was recovered by his offensive lineman, and he had a pass that he threw that hit a defensive back right in the shoulder pads. Mm-hmm. Could have had 2 turnovers.
Should have been,
but he didn't. I mean, it's a game of inches. Instead, Mayfield's the hero. He won the game. 19-game winless streak is over. Sam Darnold looked amazing in game one. Joe Namath. The Jets have the next Joe Namath. Lost his next 2 games. Mm-hmm. Hasn't looked good in either game.
Mm-mm.
Josh Allen. My God, he looked terrible in week one, week two. Boy, yesterday. Yesterday, now I know Minnesota, but they hurt themselves a lot with a lot of mistakes. They played terrible football. They weren't ready to play. But Josh Allen looked good in that game.
Yes, he did.
So this is going to be the same thing. The inconsistency is going to drive you mad at times. But what you want is you want to see a great game, because then you're like, okay, now I know we could do it.
Uh-huh.
See, unless you play a game like that, you're not capable of doing it. So the second he shows us one of those games, now we know. You're capable of that. You're just going to be inconsistent right now. But eventually, hopefully, the consistency comes.
Look, I'm thrilled. To me, you and I both agree, there was no other decision to make for the Cardinals. You're 0-3. You're not going to make the playoffs. 0-3 teams don't make the playoffs. Okay, so there's nothing else to do. There's no other decision to make. Frankly, I'm surprised. And I understand if you're Wilkes, you got to take your time, and I got to look at the tape. You know, that's just what you say to buy yourself more time to figure out when you're going to make the announcement. There was nothing else to do. There was no other decision to make. And thank goodness that I have a reason now to watch an 0-3 football team. Can you imagine watching an 0-3 football team that didn't have its future franchise quarterback on the roster, right?
Yeah.
That didn't have the answer at quarterback for next year? How god-awful that prospect would be, that it's 100 degrees outside, it's September 24th, and you don't have a franchise quarterback on your roster that you get to watch learn and grow?
You're thinking draft.
It's a night. I mean, that, at least we avoid that. At least we don't have to go down that road. 0-3 teams don't make the playoffs, but at least our 0-3 team has a franchise quarterback that we get 14 games now, 13 games, to watch, dissect, watch him take the low road, the high road, the bad moments, the good moments, and try and figure out over the course of these next 13 games if he truly is the franchise quarterback for the Cardinals. In some ways, I can't wait. As lost as this season is, in some ways, I can't wait to see what he does. And how he does it. I'm excited.
How can you not be?
Well, You cannot be, because
it's almost like
you're looking at a team that's not making the playoffs. You know, you're looking at a team that the season's effectively over in terms of that.
Suns going to make the playoffs this year?
No.
You excited about DeAndre Ayton?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, that's,
same thing.
Right.
Right.
It's the same thing. Yep. I mean, there's hope for the future. It's there's the beginning of, you know, a generation of these two young players who could be stars at their positions in their respective sports.
I want to focus on this line from this Instagram post from Rosen. He and Mike Glennon, he being Sam Bradford, he and Mike Glennon couldn't have been more supportive at a time that I thought might be a bit tense or awkward today. We talk about Sam Bradford and his future. We've talked about his contract. He's going to get $15 million no matter what. No matter what, he's going to get $15 million. The Cardinals have a couple of options here. They cut him if they wanted to, right? And they'd still owe him the $15 million. But if they don't make him active on game day, they're not going to owe him that extra money that would bump his salary from $15 million to $20 million.
Which means he's not going to be active on game day.
You would think he's not going to be active on game day.
I mean, he's not. How can you? Again, this is... He can't be active on game day. I mean, why would you? Why would you? What reason is there for him to be active? You've got a backup quarterback in Mike Glennon. Bradford's done. He's done here. You're only keeping him around because you've already spent $15 million, $16 million, and you know, maybe he could be of value to Rosen a little bit, you know, for these next 3 months to try to help him along, to be a sounding board for him, to help him watch tape and review tape and make reads. So maybe you could try to get something out of him for the next 3 months as like a coach slash mentor. There's no reason to have him active and pay $4 million over the next 13 games for him to be the backup. That's stupid.
No.
That's bad business. That's bad business. So as long as he's inactive, I don't believe he could get that $312,000 per game. To have him as the backup quarterback makes no sense. And again, I think this is not Wilkes' decision anymore. I think this becomes a business decision.
Sure.
And if I'm Michael Bidwell, I have no reason. I'm not going to give you $4 million more to be the backup. I'm not.
As long as he can still be a good mentor to Josh Rosen while being inactive and not collecting that extra $4 million, there is no reason not to keep Sam Bradford on this roster. I am firmly convinced they should keep Sam Bradford on this roster, as long as he can handle not being active every single week, not making that extra money, and still be mature enough to be a good mentor to Josh Rosen, keep him. Keep him. And keep him as insurance, because let's be honest, Josh Rosen, there are some people who are concerned about his durability coming out of UCLA
a couple
and whether
concussions.
He can stay healthy,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So, to me, there's no reason that
unless
you're
he doesn't want to. I mean, well, I don't think he retires, but I mean, Sam Bradford just went from being the starting quarterback of the Arizona Cardinals to being inactive on game days, most likely. We haven't heard that yet, but in my opinion, most likely inactive on game days and the third string quarterback. I mean,
you know,
would he even consider retirement knowing that his career is over?
Is he walking away from money by doing that? Is he leaving money on the table? Who does that?
People. Nobody. Don't. Yeah, no, very few people we have known. But there has been some occasions where it's happened.
I paid Sam Bradford $15 million for 11 lousy quarters of football. You can hang around for the rest of the season and be a good mentor for Josh Rosen. I just gave you $15 million bucks, and you gave me one good quarter of football. You can hang around and be a good mentor. And if you can't, if you can't handle that, then we've got a whole other set of issues. I think Sam will be able to handle it just fine. And I think you're going to need him around anyway, just in case.
I mean, listen, there's nothing wrong with me. As long, to me, I could live with that. I'd cut him. I mean, I'm okay with cutting him. I don't think there's much value there, to be honest with you. But the one thing I'm not doing is I'm not having him as the backup quarterback. Glennon now should be the backup on this team.
The future, and I do agree with that, the future is now here for the quarterback spot. Is the rest of the team going to follow suit? We'll explain what we mean next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Already. So let's get an update on our Twitter poll of the day, which can be found on the Burns and Gambo Twitter account at Burns and Gambo on Twitter. And for the update on the poll he made, here's Jordan Berg.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update presented by Sanderson Ford.
What you got for us today?
All right. So now that Josh Rosen is the Cardinals starting quarterback, how many games do you think the Cardinals will win the rest of the season? 31% say 0 to 2 games, 58% say 3 to 5 games, and 11% say 6 or more.
If it's 6 or more, man, that future is really bright. Think about it. 13 games left.
It doesn't mean it's not bright if it's three.
No, I wasn't saying that. But if they go 6-7 in these 13 games with Josh Rosen leading the way, for a team that has played this poorly to come out of the gates like this, it's a real reason to get jacked up about what this could be next year.
There's plenty of time to save the season. So if that's the, I mean, that argument could be made. It's not like you're making this change when you are 2-10 and there's four games left and it can't do anything. I mean, there's 13 football games left.
Do you think the season can be saved?
Not in theory it can be.
Okay.
Do I think it can be? No. I don't
okay.
think. Like, yeah, you got to win 9 games to give yourself a chance to make the playoffs. That would mean they would have to go 9-4.
Yeah.
Okay, they'd have to go 9-4. But there is 13 games left in the season.
Yeah.
So in theory,
yeah. Mathematically, yes.
You're making this change with plenty of time to save the season. Okay, you beat Seattle. Who's the next game after that?
San Francisco.
Okay, San Francisco, no Garoppolo. Now you're 2-3. Okay? So if you win those two games, you're 2-3. You're not going to tell me we're going to be coming here, but like, okay, maybe they can get themselves back in this thing. So now if you're 5-5 after 10 games, if you're 5-5 after 10, okay, that would mean they would have to go 5-2 in the next 7 games. So if you're 5-5, you give yourself a chance. So theoretically, the move is being made so early that there is time to save the season. Do I believe that it will be saved? No. I believe that this is that you're building for the future, that you're growing, you're looking to 2019. They're going to have a ton of cap space in 2019, a ton of cap space.
Yeah.
They're going to be able to add a lot of players. But in theory, yes, there is a lot of time for them to do some good here and win some games.
I'm not going to lie to you. It's funny that you brought that up. For all the reasons to go to Josh Rosen, in my opinion, this is just me, not one of them have anything to do with saving 2018. Now, maybe I'm just being a pessimist. Maybe I'm being a realist. I don't think 2018 can be saved. All right? When you're 0-3, it's been 20 years since an 0-3 team made the playoffs. It's a death sentence when it comes to postseason play. Yes, in theory, hypothetically, mathematically, you can save an 0-3 season. And it doesn't, when you explain it the way you do, it doesn't sound, hey, you're 0-3, just try to get to 5-5 and then go 4-2 the rest of the way, and now you're 9-and maybe you can make it. Well, that's for a team that has played 12 quarters of football and has looked so bad in 11 of those 12. Boy, that's a big ask, right?
Sure.
That's a big request that we have of the year. I'm not even thinking about that. It's the last thing on my mind. You know what's on my mind?
Seattle.
Seattle's on my mind. Mike McCoy and how he meshes with Josh Rosen. That's on my mind. David Johnson and getting him more than 12 carries in the running game. That's on my mind. Larry Fitzgerald only being targeted 2 times. That's on my mind.
Yeah, this is stuff that probably can't be fixed in a week.
I understand that.
This is stuff that probably needs to be fixed over a period of time. Now, the first thing is you made the quarterback change.
But you've got time.
You got time.
Yeah. Lots of time to figure these things out.
Coyotes started the season really poorly last year. Finished really strong.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're looking for the Cardinals to do that. Start off poorly, finish strong. Give us something going into the offseason to be excited about and build upon and things like that. Give us something to build upon. I think that's what you're hoping for. But all of these issues, the David Johnson only getting 12 carries, the Larry Fitzgerald only getting 2 touches, I don't know that just changing out Rosen fixes all of the other issues. Now, I am curious to see if this offense clicks and puts up 27 points against Seattle and they move the ball and Larry has 5 catches and DJ has 20 rushes for 100 yards. And, you know, a lot of this could be on Bradford. A lot of this could be on Sam Bradford. And we didn't realize it because there is blame somewhere. But is the blame on McCoy's offense or is it on Sam Bradford's inability to move the offense? Because if I'm watching plays, which I was last week, and I'm seeing guys open and Bradford's not throwing him the ball, maybe I'm not saying Mike McCoy's off the hook here. But this is his opportunity now to prove that it was Bradford, not him.
Agreed.
This is your opportunity to prove it's not my offense. My offense is fine. Couldn't run my offense with Sam at quarterback. I'm sorry. I couldn't do it. I was doing the best I could, but I couldn't run it.
I was limited. I was limited by Sam.
So limited, we cut down the playbook.
Yeah, or so limited that he wasn't doing what we needed him to do, and I would show him. We talked about this with Dave Magadan, the hitting coach for the Diamondbacks last week. Remember? He came out in the media and kind of said, hey, man.
I'm teaching him everything.
I'm
showing him everything to be successful.
I'm showing him on video. I'm telling him the approach they need to take, and they're just not doing it. Who's to say that's not happening with Mike McCoy and Sam Bradford? Who's to say that Mike McCoy isn't, man, I'm giving him everything I've got, and he is just not executing what I'm telling him to do? And that is why that is the singular most important thing to come out of these next 13 games. The McCoy relationship with Josh Rosen, because what I'm worried about, and I've said this a few times, what scares me more than anything, Josh Rosen's the guy. Is Mike McCoy the guy for Josh Rosen?
Need to see him two games with Rosen to tell.
Because if he's not, then you fire him mid-season. Then you start going down this rabbit hole of how many different offensive coordinators for Josh Rosen and how many. I mean, what? That's the Blaine Gabbert thing, right?
Yeah.
How many different offensive coordinators did he have his first few years in Jacksonville? You could never get into a groove. You could never get into a rhythm. And I know I'm getting way ahead of myself here, but nothing scares me more about this whole new arrangement than that. If Mike McCoy isn't the guy at offensive coordinator, you better figure it out, because the future is Josh Rosen, and it needs to be about making sure he is best prepared for that future. And that scares me more than anything.
We don't have a very, very small sample size. But if you look at when Rosen came in the game with 4.5 minutes left, he did have a nice pass to Jermaine Gresham down the field. He had a pass that he threw to Chad Williams that he fell down on that was down the field. He had a ball to Christian Kirk. That was a 10-yard pass down the field. Another pass to Chad Williams. I mean, it did look like it was opening up a little bit.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be very curious to see if that continues. I mean, I'm expecting a lot more offensive success now that Bradford's gone.
We did get an explanation today why David Johnson wasn't on the field for 3rd and 2 right after the 2-minute warning. I don't know if you're going to like it, but we got it.
He called me out to talk about it, and that's what I hope, and I want my coach to keep me accountable. I want my teammates to keep me accountable, and when I mess up, I want them to tell me. You know, I want Kirby to tell me. I want Wilkes and McCoy to tell me what I did wrong.
Was it a second down play that you messed up?
The second down play, yeah.
Even in that type of situation?
Yeah, because I have full trust in Chase. Yeah. Everyone has trust in Chase. We've been talking about Chase, you know, since he's been on the team, and how good of a running back he is, how great of a running back he is, and he's able to do the plays that that they call, and they don't have any second guess about what is called when he's in there.
It's a teaching moment. They pulled him out after the second down play because he did something wrong on the second down play, and over a teaching moment, they kept him off the field in that third down play, according to David Johnson. And he's more than happy. And I hear that, and I cannot, Gambo, wrap my brain around that at all. I just, you might as well be talking a different language. Wait, what? I don't understand you. What'd you say? They pulled you out for a teaching moment, and you're okay with that? Most important play of the season, and you're standing on the sideline because they wanted to teach you something from second down?
It was a completed pass for 8 yards to Chad Williams. I mean, the blitzer came from the opposite side of the field that Johnson was lined up on, and sometimes you got to pick that guy up. I'm really curious about this, because that's not the time to teach.
No,
that's not the time to put the guy in a timeout.
No,
I don't know if is somebody, are we protecting somebody here? I mean, I don't know what's going on, but that doesn't make any sense to me to pull. You need your best player on the field with a 3rd and 2. You're 10 yards away from being in field goal range. You've got to convert this. You've got 2 downs to get 2 yards. David Johnson has to be on the field. No ifs, ands, or buts. There's no excuses here.
Yeah.
And if somebody's taking him off the field, I'm like, hey, what are you doing? I'm going to take him off the field. I wanted to talk to him. Yeah, we'll talk to him later.
Later.
The game's almost over. It'll be over in 5 minutes. Relax. You can talk to him then. We'll go back and we'll show him the play on film, okay? Leave him on the field.
Tomorrow, Chicken Window Tuesday, presented by Arizona Central Credit Union. We're giving you the chance to win tickets to see the Cardinals take on the Seahawks Sunday in what will be the first start of Josh Rosen's career at State Farm Stadium. Listen at 7:15 a.m., 10:15 a.m., and then in the afternoon at 12:15 and 4:15 for your chance to win. They lost the game. Did Herm Edwards notch a moral victory on Saturday night? Something tells me that's not why he plays to win the game. That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Herm Edwards did not get famous in part for saying, you play to lose the game but gain a moral victory.
Okay.
He became in part
no moral victory.
He did not. You play to win a moral victory. Now he never said that. You play to win the game. So it's no surprise that when asked about the moral victory thing after playing Washington close over the weekend, it's no surprise at all to hear ASU's head coach Herm Edwards tell the Doug and Wolf show this morning, there are no moral victories, but there are lessons to be learned.
There's winning and there's learning. And when you learn something through defeat, hopefully that will help you the next go around when you play again. And we learned some things. Here again, I'll go back to the errors. You know, you can't make errors against good teams, mm-hmm. especially on the road. That always comes back to get you. You can do it against certain teams, with a team like that, you're not going to win that game.
Look, we all hate the phrase moral victories. We do. Anybody who loves sports hates the phrase moral victories. But there are things to be encouraged about from what happened on Saturday night in terms of what it means for the future this season for ASU football. And I do believe that.
They get the ball. Lucas has an interception. Washington tries some crazy trick play to start the game, like some stupid trick play. And Lucas picks it off. ASU has the ball at their 20-yard line. They jammed it down Washington's throat. Six plays, all runs, touchdown. And I'm like, wow, I like that. I'm like, that was good. And that was an indication right then and there that Herm wanted to run the football. Benjamin for 6, Benjamin for 7, Benjamin for none, Benjamin for 4, Benjamin for 2, 4th and goal at the 1, Benjamin for 1. Looked at that drive and I'm like, okay, I know he's going to run. I know right then and there. They had 6 plays, all runs, right down their throat. Wanted to take time off the clock. The game plan was excellent. The running was fantastic. They ran the ball extremely well in that game, like extremely well. Very impressed with that. A lot of people were hitting me up. Why is Maddie not going downfield? Why are they not getting N'Keal Harry involved? I agree with Herm. Like, that was not the time to go try to take all these shots down the field against Washington. They've got 9 guys back on that defense. If you felt like you could win the ball, the game up front, win the ball. Now, Herm did say on that cut that, you know, you can't make mistakes. You can't turn the ball over. It's 2013 after Washington kicks a field goal, and mm-hmm. ASU's got the ball on their own 31. And they're starting to move the ball, and then Smith fumbles. And he fumbled, and at that point, I thought that was the turning point of the game. Sure. Because a couple of series later, Washington goes in, they score, and they're up by 2 touchdowns. So you're down 7 and driving, and instead, you turn it over, and a couple of series later, Washington punches one in to go up 2 touchdowns. ASU came back. They scored a touchdown with about 3 minutes left, but they couldn't get a stop. If they could have got a stop, they might have got the ball back with a minute and a half left, and who knows what could have happened. They ended up losing the game. They played hard. They fought hard. I'm genuinely excited about the way they played on the road against Washington.
And if that, now, some people might interpret that as a moral victory. I don't think of it that way. What I think of it as a loss in a game that you could have won. But the story that ASU football has told so far through these first 4 games is that this is a team that is very capable of competing every single Saturday. I believe we'll be in a lot of these football games. And now, when you look at the next 6, even though they lost on Saturday night, I feel really, really good about their ability to compete over these next 6 football games to put themselves in a position to, frankly, be better than I thought they were going to be in 2018. If you want to classify that as a moral victory, knock yourself out. I don't, but to me, that's what I took out of that game. Hey, man, that's a tough environment. That's a tough place they went to go play.
Absolutely.
And they hung with those kids. They hung with them on the road, cold, wet, night, 71,000 people screaming their lungs out. They hung with that team and lost by a touchdown. This team can compete. They can hang around. I feel good about their chances over these next 6 games to put themselves in a position to do some really good things.
Yeah, the one game that, you know, and I said that they're all winnable. Stanford is a very, very good football team. And look what they did to Oregon the other day when they were dead and buried. They came back and won that football game somehow. Oregon stepped all over themselves in that game. Literally stepped all over themselves. I mean, why are you not taking a knee? But these coaches are so afraid to punt the ball with 4 seconds left in the game. It's like, what is so wrong with punting a ball with 9 seconds left, 10 seconds? What are you worried about? Instead, they'd rather have a freshman run the ball and fumble, and then you, the guy kicks a field goal, and then you go to overtime. I mean, it's just so stupid the way people manage the clock these days. I almost can't believe it. Take the clock down as much as you can, punt the damn ball, and stop them. I mean, they're going to have 10 seconds left in the game. What are they going to do? They're afraid of a punt block. They're afraid of a return for a touchdown. But a freshman running back fumbles the football. They kick a field goal. They go overtime. Stanford's going to be a tough team, even here. That's going to be a tough game. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, David Shaw's amazing. They're a well-coached team. They're physical. But it's at home. Those six games, if they could go 4-2 in those six games, they set themselves up going into the last two games against Oregon and Arizona to maybe get one more win and get seven wins. Seven wins, Herm's first year, I'd be impressed. I really would. I'll be impressed.
So would I.
Yeah. Hats off, jump on the train, whatever you want to do. Man, that'd be a good season.
It would be. And one, especially given the schedule and how tough it looked, it seems like it'd be that would do.
Now, Herm Edwards. Might not be comfortable, but you have a seat.
Herm Edwards this morning on the Doug and Wolf Show does not like how his team doesn't play smart at times.
I just think sometimes we don't play smart. And here again, that's what got us in this game. And when you play against good teams, you can't give them second chances. Mm-hmm. You can't kill drives due to penalties or just mistakes of not tackling well. And there was a couple times in this game where that came to fruition, and they either killed drives on offense or we extended drives defensively because of missed tackle or missed assignment.
Now you look at the next six games for the Sun Devils. Home against Oregon State, at Colorado. Home against Stanford, at USC. Home against Utah. Home against UCLA.
Some of those games are like, okay, you have to win the Oregon State game.
Yes.
Okay, you have to win. They just got thumped by Arizona.
You have to win the UCLA game.
And I think you have to win the UCLA game because it's home and they're terrible. The other games are toss-up games for both teams. Colorado on the road, not an easy game. Stanford at home, not an easy game. USC on the road, I mean, not an easy game, but all of those games are games that you can win or you can lose those games. So if you split them, I mean, you should again. It should beat Oregon State. You should beat UCLA. You should. And then if you could try to find a way to get two more wins out of the other four, man, you seven wins, bowl yeah. game. Herm's first year going to a bowl game.
You know, again, it might not be the moral victory. If people don't like moral victories, that's fine. But to come out of that game Saturday night encouraged about their chances against these six games, I'll take that.
Yeah.
I'll take that right now. Given everything else we have going on in this town right now.
I still can't believe Stanford beat Oregon.
I know.
38-31 in overtime. Stunning. Inexplicable. I can't believe that they won that football game.
It was the change that almost every single Cardinals fan, I think every Cardinals fan, was calling for. What does the franchise's greatest quarterback think of Josh Rosen starting? You'll hear next on the Burns and Gambo Show.